Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Welcome. Some of you I don't think I've met before, but nice to have you present. Both morning and evening we've been reading from the 10th canto Bhagavatam, different leelas, morning and different leelas in the evening. And in the morning leela that we're reading from, it's comes right after the Damodar leela. Chapter 9 and 10. Chapter 9 is the Damodar leela. Chapter 10 is Krishna pulling over the twin Arjuna trees. And chapter 11 begins, the residents of Vrindavan hear the big crash. And they come to the scene and see what they see, and they're wondering, they're astonished, they're fearful, they have different emotions that are described in relation to Krishna. And because he's, that the emphasis in all of this is, they have such tonal absorption in him, not like, or, you know, something, a worldly kind of attachment between one person, another, a mother and a child, their friend and a friend, etc., but a transcendental affinity that cannot be disturbed by Krishna's display of opulence. In this case, the opulence is, he's really small. He's like just beyond toddling stage. He moves around, but very small. He's less than 3 years old. Picture in your mind, little boy, less than 3 years old. And here he is, tied with a rope around his waist, and the other end is tied to a grinding mortar. And it said, they can see that the grinding mortar is heavy. And so they can see it being dragged across the ground. And then it comes in between two trees, specifically even Yamala Arjun trees, which means it's really hard wood with deep root system. And the roots totally uprooted. The trees fell. And they're thanking God that the tree didn't fall on Krishna. And how did this happen? And who did it? And what was their reason? And That's the evening session. Pardon me. That's what we're discussing in the evening. So take two. We're going to go to the morning session, if you don't mind. Because I just get like yesterday evening we heard from Mahabharata about the Agni devouring the Kandava forest and all of that, so. And how that relates to. So I'll just continue the thought. When the residents of Vrindavan saw what they saw about the two trees falling over, they were astonished. And some thanked God for protecting. And the Brahmanas thought, maybe he has some special powers. Maybe he did it, because the little boys that were with Krishna said, they pointed to him and said, he did it. He pulled over the trees. Grinding mortar fell sideways. Krishna pulled the grinding mortar with the rope around his waist, and he uprooted those two trees. And not only that, but two heavenly looking persons came out of the trees. And the elders said, oh, child talk. But the Brahmanas thought, maybe it's true. But then this Kandava forest example is used, like the Kandava forest when Indra tried to stop the burning of the Kandava forest by sending downpours of torrential rain. It didn't put out the fire. It was like ghee onto a fire. It inflamed the fire more. So similarly, when the Brahmanas heard what the children said and saw what they saw, because they're Brahmanas, they're very qualified people. Maybe it's true what the boys say, but it just increased their affection for Krishna. Didn't serve to deter their affection for Krishna. As a little boy that's in their village, and they have this special affection for him. So now, that was what we talked about yesterday. Sorry about that. this morning class is a description. Let's see. Yeah. Chapter 34 of Canto 10. Chapter 34. If you want to look up the verse, you can have your handheld device and everything, or a book. 10:34:21. 10:34:21. 10:34. There's an extra book over here. 10:34:21. Chapter 34 has two parts. The first part is the pastime of the residents of Vrindavan going to a special place on Shivaratri. To observe Shivaratri. And it's not just the residents of Vrindavan, it's people from all over the place, to a special place that's not far from Mathura, kind of southeast of Mathura. And they went and did their rituals and worshiped Lord Shiva. And because it was the night had fallen, they decided to spend the night. So they just laid on the ground. Very simple village people. And didn't hire a hotel or anything. They just laid on the ground. And Nanda Maharaj was a little apart from everybody, the king. And a serpent came to swallow him. A boa constrictor, big, big guy. And Nanda called out, Krishna! And everybody woke up, and they came to try to stop the snake, beating the snake with sticks, with burning sticks from the fire, from the campfire at night. Didn't work. Krishna heard. Krishna came. Krishna put his foot on the serpent. And out of the serpent's body came a Vidyadhara, a resident of one of the upper regions of our universe. Bhuvar Loka, the Vidyadhara Loka is in that region, below heaven, but with great vidya dhara, they have great knowledge and great beauty, etc., etc. So the Vidyadhara spoke. Krishna showed his opulence once again. And the Vidyadhara spoke words that everybody heard, that you're the personality of Godhead, etc. He requested permission to go back to his place and carrying bhakti with him to give bhakti to all the people in his place. And they finished their rituals in 3 days. They broke the fast and they went back to Vrindavan. And sometime later, on the full moon of the month of Phalgun, the same day as Holi festival, the residents of Vrindavan were observing the Holi festival. And one of the ways that they were celebrating Krishna and Balaram at this stage, they're still very young, but they were observing Holi in a traditional way of singing, etc., etc., and attracted to them were the young gopi girls, and the gopi girls were playing musical instruments and dancing, and so they were singing and dancing, playing Holi in Vrindavan, and that's what we're reading from. Text 21, Krishna and Balaram wore flower garlands and spotless garments, and their limbs were beautifully decorated and anointed. The women sang their glories in a charming way, bound to them by affection. There's no BBT commentary, but I'm going to be reading commentaries from other acharyas, starting with Jiva Goswami. The pastime is described in 3 verses. The 2, Krishna Balaram, were described by the gopis using songs suitable for Harika. Harika is the place that the language that our acharyas use, and it's in the verse. Harika is another name for the holy festival, because the places where they would observe it is Harika. The 2 were described by the gopis using songs suitable for Harika, attractive, with joyful singing and arrangements, or lalitam. Since they were bound by affection to the 2 boys. Balaram had separate gopis during this pastime. This has been indicated previously, makes reference to a verse from chapter 15. This is chapter 34. Krishna is talking to Balaram, where he says, "You have embraced the young cowherd women between your 2 arms, a favor hankered after by the goddess of fortune herself." It will be stated in verse 24, that's 3 verses later, hearing the song, the gopis fainted. Paragraph. The 2, Krishna and Balaram, sang songs, and the 2 separate groups of gopis fainted. However, in describing the pastime, because of the crowds on that occasion, the description of the 2 boys' separate pastimes are merged together, though the 2 actually had separate pastimes. That is, it's being narrated by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit, and it's on the bank of the sacred river at the time of his departure, and there's a whole lot of people around. So for brevity's sake, he combined the 2 pastimes into 1. Sanatana Goswami writes, 3 verses describe the event. They were praised by women who were expert at singing. Their singing is described in 3:10:33:9. That's the Rasalila section, the previous chapter, chapter 33. They sang softly, lalitam, very close to them. Both were praised since Balaram's activities assisted Krishna. Question. Why did they praise Balaram? Answer. They had strong friendship with Krishna. They were bound by the chains of prema. By that affection, there could be no fault in their soft singing. The two were beautifully ornamented and smeared with sandalwood. They wore garlands and spotless cloth. The night was beautiful. The pastime begins with the full moon rising and a cool breeze and, you know, the whole description of the fragrances in the air because it was the particular season. Jasmine was in full bloom, and so the breezes were filled with jasmine scent and lotuses scent. These two are mentioned specifically. Text 22. The two lords praised the nightfall, signaled by the rising of the moon and the appearance of stars, lotus-scented breeze, and bees intoxicated by the fragrance of jasmine flowers. So there we are. There's the two fragrances in the air. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, they respected the beginning of night, fragrant with winds, laden with perfume of the water lilies, served by the rising moon and stars, and bees maddened by the fragrance of jasmine flowers. Jiva Goswami writes, at the end of the Shira season, when the cold mist disappears, the moon shines brightly. When spring begins, the jasmines bloom. So this is, you know, in North India, in the winter season, there's lots of fog in the mornings. And when there's fog, you can't see the stars and the moon. But when the season is over, and it's not, you're saying mist, but fog is over, then it's special. Sanatan Goswami writes, the breeze was soft, fragrant, and cooling. Though there are many colorful flowers in Vrindavan, only jasmine and lotus are mentioned here. They blossomed at night for the special occasion. The full moon rising, the lotuses close at night. But the full moon rising, and for this pastime, they opened and the fragrances went in the air. Text 23. Krishna and Balaram sang, producing the entire range of musical sounds simultaneously. That's explained in detail in the purport or the commentary. Their singing brought happiness to the ears and minds of all living beings. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, Krishna and Balaram sang together, improvising melodies. And the Sanskrit is swara, mandala, murchana, making what was impossible, possible. And here's some detail by Jiva Goswami, making reference to Sangita Sara. That's a text, a Vedic text, that describes music. I mean, the Vedas has everything. So Sangita Sara is one of those music text. Their singing brought happiness, mangalam, to the ears and minds of all beings. The songs had murchanas. That's a word in the Sanskrit of the verse. The songs had murchanas of all notes. Sangita Sara describes this. When the seven notes, ascending and descending, are sung in order, it is called murchana. That's standard. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti. But it's, you know, it's already there in the Vedic text. That's called murchana. From these, starting with each note of the scale, seven scales are derived. These are played or sung in three gramas, gramas, or basic scales, making 21 murchanas, and these are the precursors of ragas. Paragraph. Since they must be vibrated separately, it is impossible for other persons to produce all the musical tones simultaneously. Nevertheless, Krishna and Balaram were exhibiting at one time a melody consisting of the entire range of musical notes called Swara Mandala Murchitam. In such a way to create auspiciousness in the minds and the ears, Sanatan Goswami writes, the two had pastimes of singing with the gopis, skillful at singing songs which amazed the universe. The singing became excellent because of the two singing together. The gopis became blissful with this. The purpose was to give happiness to Balaram, who is the acharya of singing as Shesha avatar. In the association of the gopis, who are expert at music. So, you know who Shesha, Nag, he's the many-hooded, many-mouthed serpent bed of Lord Vishnu, and he gives teachings, for example, it's described, he gives teachings of all the Vedas to the four Kumaras. So there's a line of disciplic succession from the four Kumaras, Kumara Sampradaya, that's still present today. And they receive knowledge of all the Vedas from Anantashesh. There's a nice description of that. So one of the things that he's also known for, Anantashesh, is he's the authority or the acharya in music or singing. So the purpose was to bring happiness to Balaram, whose expansion is Shesha, and so happiness of Balaram and the gopis together, the singing, and the gopis are expert at music. Now, this verse that we just are discussing is described in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Chaitanya Bhagavat is a life, it's a biography about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the commentary we're going to read is commentary by Prabhupada's spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta. So, right in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Adikanda 137, it's in the beginning, so it's very, 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 very beginning of this large book. I mean, sitting on your shelf, it's about that big, so many volumes with the commentary. So it's introducing Lord Balaram, and this verse is the verse. Krishna and Balaram sang, producing the entire range of musical sounds simultaneously. Their singing brought happiness to the ears and minds of all living beings. Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary says, in his Lagu Toshani, Srila Jiva Goswami quotes the following description of Murchana from the Sangita Sara, which we already read, but there's a shorter version. A murchana is a scale using seven notes in ascending and descending sequence. There are three modes or gramas, each with seven subdivisions or murchanas, making a total of 21 murchanas. Same, that's just quoting Jiva Goswami. Elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, 6:16:38, King Chitraketu prays to Lord Sankarshan as follows. This is the same Shesha. He is the acharya for singing. O Lord, O Supreme, unintelligent persons who thirst for sense enjoyment and who worship various demigods are no better than animals in the human form of life because of their animalistic propensities. They fail to worship your lordship, and instead they worship the insignificant demigods who are but small sparks of your glory. With the destruction of the entire universe, including the demigods, the benedictions received from the demigods also vanish, just like the nobility when a king is no longer in power. So what follows is a detailed description of Balaram, because that's what's at the beginning of this Chaitanya Bhagavat. Lord Chaitanya appeared with Lord Nityananda. Just like in many of our temples, we have deities of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, called Gornitai. Gora is Lord Chaitanya, Nitai is Nityananda, Gornitai deities. So just as Krishna was always with Balaram, Lord Nityananda was always with, Lord Chaitanya was always with Lord Nityananda, because their expansions, or they're not expansions, they're identical. So here is a description to talk about Lord Chaitanya. It's necessary to understand who is Lord Nityananda, just as it's necessary to understand Krishna by properly understanding Balaram. So here's a description of Balaram. It's a little technical, so don't worry about it if you don't understand all the technical. Here we go. He quotes, okay, the glories of Sri Balaram or Sankarshan, who is worshipable for all living entities, are described in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 34, which we're discussing. Also in Chapter 65 of Canto 10. Fifth Canto, Chapters 17 and 25. And Sixth Canto, Chapter 16. These are for people who like to do scrutinizing research. He's giving the references. Those who are indifferent to these descriptions can never make advancement on the path of devotional service. In spite of their material intelligence and mundane knowledge, which is a product of their own mental speculation, such people are unable to appreciate the topics of Sri Baladeva or Sankarshan, who is the source of all Vishnu Tattva expansions. In Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila Chapter 5 of Adi Lila is all about Balaram also. This topic is described as follows. Quote, Sri Balaram is the counterform of Lord Govinda. They're eternally existing. Krishna is the source. Krishna expands. His first expansion is Balaram. But it's not like once upon a time there wasn't Balaram and then Krishna looked at his watch and said, I think it's time for Balaram. Boop, there's Balaram. Not like that. But expansion doesn't mean a chronological, it's a ontological reality. So Balaram is the counterform of Lord Govinda. Balaram's own expansion is called Maha Sankarshana. The marginal potency of the Lord is known as the Jiva. Maha Sankarshan is the shelter of all jivas. his fragment, the Purusha refers to the creators of the universe, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshe Vishnu, Paramatma, Shiradakshe Vishnu, those are the Purushas. Like the Purusha Sukta prayers from Rig Veda, it's glorifying those, the creators of the universe. So his fragment, the Purusha, that's Mahasankarshan's fragment, the Purusha, is counted as a Kala. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in chapter 10, opulences of the Absolute, he describes his vibhutis or his opulences, and he concludes by saying, but what's, there's no limit to my opulences. Why, but by a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support the whole universe. By but a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support the entire universe. That's Paramatma, pervades and supports the entire universe. And Garbhadakshe Vishnu as well. So these are expansions of Mahasankarshan. That's what's being said. His fragment, the Purusha, is counted as a kala, or part of a plenary portion. The first Purusha means Mahavishnu. The first Purusha casts his glance at Maya from a distance, and thus he impregnates her with the seed of life in the form of the living entities. It's the creation process being described. It's several places in the Vedas described like this, right in Purusha Sukta prayers from Rig Veda, but it's detailed in many places in the Vedas. So Mahavishnu glances at Maya or Pradhan, and the creation begins. I say this Kala is Mahavishnu. He is the Mahapurusha, who is the source of all the other Purushas and who is all-pervading. Garbhadakshayi Vishnu and Shiradakshayi Vishnu are both called Purushas. They are plenary portions of Mahavishnu, or Karnadakshayi Vishnu, the first Purusha, who is the abode of all the universes. That Purusha is Paramatma, is the performer of creation, maintenance, and destruction. He manifests himself in many incarnations, for he is the maintainer of the world. So, avatars appear from Vishnu. That Lord Vishnu is but a part of a part of a plenary portion of Lord Nityananda, who is the source of all incarnations, meaning Nityananda and Balaram are the same. Lord Chaitanya is the same Lord Krishna, and Lord Nityananda is Lord Balaram. Lord Nityananda fulfills all of Lord Chaitanya's desires, as Balaram fulfills all of Krishna's desires. These two brothers are like one body. They are identical manifestations. If you do not believe in Lord Nityananda, you will fall down. If you have faith in one but disrespect the other, your logic is like the logic of accepting half a hen. It would be better to be an atheist by slighting both brothers than a hypocrite by believing in one and slighting the other. So, I didn't know you all would be here, so it's a little detailed, a little technical. I'll say it again slowly. If the purpose of this is appreciation of when Krishna is performing his pastimes in Vrindavan, it's not by accident or coincidence, it's by design that Balaram is with him. He is the seventh child of Devaki, and Krishna is the eighth child of Devaki. And because he's the elder brother, he paves the way for Krishna's pastimes. And there's many things to be said about Balaram's mood of wishing to be in service to Krishna. So here's the pastime where it's holy, and Krishna and Balaram and all the residents of Vrindavan, they're observing holy. And they're observing it in a traditional way. And specifically, Krishna and Balaram, as brothers in a mood of friendship, sakya, like Arjuna's dear friend of Krishna, bhaktosi me sakha cheti, a dear friend. So Balaram, at this particular stage, is not taking the role of the elder brother, that's another mood, but it's just friends. And they're just enjoying, as friends enjoy with one another. And specifically, it's enjoying holy in a way that enriches the mood of love of all the residents by their singing. Their singing, we don't hear so much about Krishna singing, we hear about people singing about Krishna. But this is Krishna singing, and he's really good. He can do something that no one can do. And Balaram is complimenting him because he likes to serve Krishna. And the gopis are complimenting them because they like music and they love Krishna. So it's a big festival. Not about anything other than what's being said. It's for the pleasure of Balaram. Specifically, Acharya is describing. So who is this Balaram anyway? And it's helpful if you want to develop real love for somebody. It's really helpful to know about that somebody. Supposing I told you there's somebody I'd really like you to meet, but I can't tell you anything about their personality, even what their name is, what they look like, how they spend their time, but they're really nice. I really want you to meet them. That's different than if you say details and details, and the person is like this, and their kindness is like that, or their compassion is like that, and their loving dealings are always so nice, and you hear, well, I really want to meet that person. When it comes to God, who, you know, even atheists know about God. Who doesn't? Prabhupada's explanation is that even in Aborigine circumstances, there's something that people look up to. They worship a mountain. I learned this from Mount McKinley is in Alaska. But it's known in Alaska as Denali, because the people, the inhabitants there, they saw this like humongous mountain. It's not as tall as Mount Everest, but from the base, because Mount Everest is part of a big, 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 big mountain range, and it grows out of the mountain range. Mount McKinley or Denali is bigger. Because it's right from the ground, it just goes up, and it's really, whew. So, but the people worshipped it, or some American Indians would worship a bird, or a feather, or this, or that, and worship is, it's of the soul. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks a question, the Visions of Faith chapter in Bhagavad Gita, if people don't have faith in you, are they going to have faith in something else? In other words, is faith intrinsic to the soul? And the answer is yes. According to the modes of nature, one will have faith because it's of the soul. So then he describes faith in the different modes. So worship, and if you, once you hear then, you know, God, then what's God? Maybe it's a feather, maybe it's a mountain, maybe it's whatever, what, a rainbow, maybe it's, who knows what people think is God. And they worship. So the Vedas, summarized in Vedanta Sutra, is searching for that. That which is the source of everything. The absolute truth, Vedanta Sutra defines the source of everything, whatever that is, that's the absolute truth. And then the Vedas are pursuant of that. So what's the absolute truth? And different theologies have different ideas of what that is. Or it doesn't mean this one's wrong if this one's right or that one's right. It's just there may be different angles of vision of the same thing, but what's the complete picture? The Bhagavatam teaches us the absolute truth has different features. The learned Vedantists have concluded that the absolute truth is non-dual. This is Vedanta Tattva Vidas Tattvam Yajjnanam Advayam. If you like to reference things, you can look it up later. 1 to 11. Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 11. It says what I'm just now saying. Those who are learned Vedantists, they have concluded the absolute truth is non-dual, Advaya, non-dual. And in that Advayam realm, there's three features. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And it's the same absolute truth, just with a different perspective. They're not multiple absolute truths. There's one. Absolute truth. There's one source of everything. And the Bhagavan feature includes Paramatma and Brahman. You can't say the converse. So the light of the sun comes from the sun. So if you understand the sun, you understand the sunshine. But if you understand the sunshine, you don't necessarily understand the sun. What to speak of then? The sun god. So some people go, oh silly, sun god. And some people don't go, oh silly, that's the sun god is the basis of the sun and the sunshine. And some persons worship the sun. It's one of the standard yoga asanas. is the at the time of the rising of the sun to the yoga asana that deals with respecting the sun and so forth and so on. So the absolute truth in fullness is Bhagavan. And then there's multiple features of Bhagavan. Like Lord Srinadev, he's Bhagavan. Or Lord Ram, he's Bhagavan. And so many avatars of the Lord, they're all Bhagavan. So what's the source of all those Bhagavans? That's also in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.28, where it says, Krishna is the source of all avatars. He's the source of all expansions of the Supreme Lord. So what's he like? And what does he do? And, you know, give me a little travel advertisement because I'd like to, and maybe I'd like to go there and be with Krishna. So this is the travel advertisement. This is what Krishna does. This is who Krishna is. And with him is also Balaram, who is his direct counterpart. His eternal expansion. And from Balaram so many things. And then you can start getting the whole picture of what is everything resting upon. And the opportunity of devotional services to connect with him, that which is the source of everything, Krishna. And don't neglect Balaram. So when this pastime is taking place, Balaram's there. And it's specifically Krishna likes giving pleasure to his devotee, like in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna informed Arjuna. You saw that universal form. Everyone has already decided, Arjuna, they're not returning home. You saw in the universal form, they're not going back home. They're finished. Because I appeared in this world to annihilate the demoniac kings and liberate them. So that's going to happen. You can participate and be the instrument or not. That's a free will choice. But it's already a done deal. They're not returning from this battlefield. But they'll be liberated. So Krishna wanted to give that honor to Arjuna. There are other reasons, but that's one of them. Krishna likes. He likes to honor his devotees. He likes. And what he likes, that's what happens. It's not like, well, I like it, but I, you know, whatever he likes, that's it. One of my, I like the, there was a, Gopinath, one of our congregation members' children. How old is Gopinath? Nine or ten, something like that. So he wanted to know this question and answer thing. What's my favorite pastime of Krishna? I said, I'd tell him later. So I've been thinking about it. And that the pastimes where Krishna shows that he just likes giving pleasure to his devotees. And there's many of them. And there's different, but that when that element is there, that's my favorite pastimes. Of course, that's practically everything. But one of them is this one. It's 20 after already. I'm gonna, you know, little Krishna Katha. This. When Krishna killed Kamsa, there it was fantastic, but it created a problem too, because the two wives of Kamsa were daughters of Jarasandha. So after their husband was killed, the two daughters of Jarasandha went to Jarasandha. Daddy, Krishna killed their husband. Get back. Do something. I take a vow. I will destroy Krishna and the whole Yadu dynasty. I take a vow. So he gathered a massive army and went rushing to Dwarka. Krishna was informed Jarasandha is ready for battle with his whole army. He laughed. Balaram, you stay here. I'll just go on the battlefield myself and take care of him. His entire army was destroyed by Krishna single-handedly, leaving one person, Jarasandha. And Krishna said, you can go home now. So he was shamed. So he was thinking on the way back, I'm going to give up my life. Because shame is worse than death. His ministers advised him otherwise. No, no. Just one of those things, you know, you weren't ready and get another army. Yeah, get another army. So he got another army and it did 22 times. He brought armies and Krishna destroyed the entire army, leaving one person. You think he'd get the picture? But he didn't. He has another nature. Very stubborn. So then an alliance was made between between Jarasandha. He sent text messages back and forth. The Kaliyavana, a leader of the Yavana clan, had some desire to be in battle with Krishna, so they made a dual attack. Simultaneously, both coming to Mathura, and Krishna saw and received word, two separate armies, and he turned to Balaram and said, this isn't good, because the residents of Mathura may be harmed. So I'm going to do the following. You take care of holding off the army till I get back. So he went to Dwarka, arranged for Vishwakarma to build Dwarka, transferred everybody from Mathura to Dwarka and installed them in their houses in Dwarka and came back onto the battlefield. There was, everything was waiting for him. And he's on the battlefield and Kaliyavana is really charged up. He wants to kill Krishna. So Krishna looked at him and started running. Just out of the reach of Kaliyavana. Kaliyavana ran faster. Krishna ran a little bit faster, just out of the reach, so he would keep following him. And Krishna had a plan. He wanted to give some service to his dear devotee, King Mujikunda. And this is just Krishna's nature. He could have, he didn't need to run from a battlefield. Like Ram, 14,000 soldiers totally wiped him out. And Kara and Dushan and Trishiras, and so single-handedly, Krishna doesn't need any help. But he wanted to give some service to Mujikunda. So he went into the cave where Mujikunda was asleep. And Mujikunda had a benediction from the demigods because he'd helped them out in a battle. No one should wake me. I'm really tired. And if they wake me, then from my eyes will come fire and they'll be cindered. And the commentary says he was thinking like that because he was really useful for the demigods. Maybe they'll come and bother him again. So don't come and bother me, please. I'm really tired. So when Kaliyavana came and saw somebody sleeping in the cave, he thought, oh, Krishna's tired, so he went and kicked him. Instantly, Kaliyavana was cindered. Flames came from Mujikunda's eyes. And then there's this nice exchange between Mujikunda, who didn't recognize Krishna for whatever the reason, and he asked, who are you? You're effulgent. And he said who he was. I've become your devotee by hearing about you. And now you've come, and what great fortune. And you've given me some service on top of it. So Krishna likes to give happiness to his devotees. He likes. And whatever he likes, that's what happens. So, in this case, he likes giving happiness to the gopis, giving happiness to Balaram, giving happiness to all living entities by he and Balaram singing. So, impossibly, you can't sing seven notes simultaneously. But they did. And then three scales simultaneously. And they did. And who knows what that sounded like. And the gopis were thrilled. And they complimented with their singing the glories of Krishna and Balaram. It was their grand festival. Just for giving happiness to his devotees. According to their particular type of love. Each one something different. Each one something different. And this is leading up to the next thing that happens. A follower of the treasure of heaven sees all the girls, and he doesn't pay any attention to Krishna and Balaram, and he tries to kidnap them to enjoy them. Shankarchuda. So that's what the second half. Krishna deals with Shankarchuda. Okay, so we've been going for a whole hour. Let's see if there's any comments or questions. You've got to go. Yeah, I can tell. But you stayed to hear. Okay. Anyone else in the procedure is people in the room can speak and then people send in their text message questions. Okay, you can give the microphone to her. Come back. If something comes, you just raise your hand. Go ahead.
So this is Uttama Bhakta Prabhu. Is revelation of absolute truth to us subject to the degree of our desire to have relationship with him in service versus desire to enjoy his creation under his blessings?
Yes. Yes. Yes, exactly.
This is Visalaksha Prabhu. Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan rest on Lord Sri Krishna. Still, why some unfortunate people approach Brahman, demigods, and is not able to serve Krishna through Lord Balarama?
Because of desire, something that's of the living entity along with faith is desire. And if desire is directed over here, or directed over there, or directed somewhere else, that's where, based upon their desire, that's what they become attracted to. And as they, depending upon the individual, they may go more deeply into that attraction and have different conceptions of what is happiness and what is higher truth and so on. Resting upon desire of living entities. And then the reciprocation is there from Krishna.
This is from Balaram Prasad Prabhu. Sri Rukmini fell in love with Krishna just by hearing, like Mukchukunda also loved Krishna by hearing. I'm also hearing but still not fallen in love with Krishna. What is lacking?
You really want to know? Well, we're conditioned souls and, you know, we're half awake and half asleep. And so, jeev jago, wake up. So, you know, because we're covered. They were in a very elevated position. It's like, the example given in the Bhagavatam of starting a fire using wet wood or starting a fire using dry wood. And the dry wood can ignite very quickly and the wet wood takes longer. So you're in, you know, the wet wood category along with the rest of us. It takes longer. We have to go on in a prolonged manner of hearing and then we can become dry wood and then ignite.
This is Radha Kunja Bihari Prabhu. Arjuna is Indra's son. How come they had to fight each other in the Kandavavana episode?
It said that Indra knew, but Indra wanted to see the prowess of his son. So it was arranged by Krishna for that to happen that way.
And this is Hema Suryavanshi Mataji. What is the age difference between Krishna and Balaram?
You know from your Vaishnava calendar, the appearance day of Balaram is on the Purnima, and Krishna's appearance day is on the Ashtami. So 8 days. Jiva Goswami says they were of the same age by the logic that the development of them was parallel. In other words, they started crawling at the same time, they started talking at the same time, they were doing everything at the same time. They were the same age, separated by 8 days.
This is Sucharita Mataji. Are there more than one Shankachuda, the one who marries Tulsi Mata in previous appearance?
Shatarupa will answer that question for you offline. There is a description. This is this Tulsi Vivaha topic, right? There are the Vedas, parts of the Vedas, along with the Shruti, there's Smriti. And the Smriti, part of the Smriti is histories or Puranas. And it's described within the Vedas themselves that the Puranas are mode of goodness, Sattva Guna Puranas, Tamas, Rajas, Rajas Guna Puranas, and Tamasic Guna Puranas. And the Tamasic Guna Purana has this story that you're referring to, and it's not part of our Vaishnava tradition, but people that grew up in India don't necessarily know. They just do what their grandmother did. And their grandmother may have known this particular pastime from the Tamasic Puranas. And so they like it. But it's not something that our acharyas like. They don't make reference to this. So I'd rather just leave it in the category of it's a Tamasic topic that we stay away from because it's tamasic. And if you want further explanation, ask Shatarupa.
The next question is from Sangeeta Kapoor Mataji and Megha Mataji. You mentioned that all the avatars come from Sankarsana, who is Balaram. Can you please expand on this?
Well, yeah, sure. Two things. If you want to know something further, you go to Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila Chapter 5, and those were just translations of verses, and the purports have details and details, and your head will spin with the details. But if you want details, that's where you'll find it. Adi Lila Chapter 5. And then there's a second point that's also within Chaitanya Charitamrita, where sometimes it says this, and sometimes it says that, and it seems that they're in contradiction. And within scripture. And the way to reconcile this and that seem to say something different is there's the absolute truth, that from which everything comes, and then it's not confusing because everything, there is a source of everything, and that which is the source of everything has expanded himself in various features. So sometimes it may be said, for example, Vishnu is the source of all avatars. That's commonly understood. Or Narayan is the source of Vishnu, who is the source of all avatars. Or it may be said Krishna is the source of all avatars. It may be said that Balaram is the source of all avatars. So like, my head's spinning already. Which is it? And, you know, welcome to the territory of, if you don't understand that which is the source of everything, your head can spin. And you throw your hands up in the air and say, you know, too much for me. Because I'm used to this very linear, non-higher dimensional picture of things. But the higher dimensional picture of things, that there is a source of everything, and it can be said this, and it could be said that. You know, Balaram, of the verses that we read, Balaram is Govinda's counterpart. They're non-different except for color. And Balaram expands as Mahasankarshan. And Mahasankarshan expands as the Purushas. So you can say Balaram is a source of the Purushas. Or you can say Mahasankarshan is a source of the Purushas. And they're not contradictory. But you only get the picture if you understand what's the source of everything. And if you don't understand the source of everything, you can easily get confused. And that's the world in which we live. It's a place of confusion. So, in one sense, it's not super important. Which is it, this or that? So what's important is, what's the source of everything? What is it that is the source of everything? That's Vedanta. Or that's the Vedas. And it's important to know what is the source of everything. And then if you get this and that kind of, I can't figure it out right now, don't worry about it. Stay fixed on what's the source of everything, and gradually you'll start to understand. Next.
This is Radha's question, Atulya Mataji's daughter.
Uh-huh.
How to understand the translation of verse 7.4.13? Here is the part which is confusing. Although he was abominable, all but the three principal demigods, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, personally worshipped him to please him by bringing him various presentations with their own hands. It is about Hiranyakashipu.
Yeah. So I'm just now being presented with the verse, although you mentioned it yesterday, Radha. And I want to go to what our acharyas say before I say.
There is a but there, Guru Maharaj.
What?
There is a but. But accept them. That's what the text is here. But the
principle. I'll respond to it tomorrow morning. I'll look at what our acharyas say, and rather, because it's, Radha's an important person. She's asking an important question, and I'd like to get it, really clear. So tune in tomorrow morning, Radha, and we'll take it first thing. If I forget, somebody here can remind me. We'll do it first thing. Before we even get to the questions, we'll take your question first. Okay?
This is Amol Bakshi Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada said in a lecture that worship of Radha Krishna is a little difficult. So worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is very kind and does not take offense. Can you please elaborate on this?
That because Lord Chaitanya does not take offense doesn't mean I can be as offensive as I like, no problem. Rather, the meaning is, worship of Radha Krishna is on the highest level, and therefore one should be particularly qualified and careful in engaging in Radha Krishna worship. As far as the rules of deity worship are concerned, there's more rules and more strictures and more strictness in Radha Krishna worship. And in contrast, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Namo Mahavadanyaya, Mahavadanyaya. He's the most munificent, or it's a particular word, like merciful, in its meaning, Mahavadanyaya, because he readily gives. Krishna Prema Pradayate. So, in Lord Chaitanya's presence in this world, he engaged all kinds of people. Jagai and Madhai, for example, classic, is, super drunkards, woman hunters, cursing, sinful, there's no sinful activity they didn't do. Really bad. And Lord Chaitanya delivered them. So, such people cannot worship Radha Krishna, but they can worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he's so merciful. And after Lord Chaitanya delivered them, he made just one request. Don't resume these bad activities again. So, that's a little elaboration on that point. How are we doing with questions? That's it. Anything? What's the difference between body and soul? The difference is, well, there's many differences. One's temporary and the other's not temporary. Sat is eternal and asat is temporary. Then who we are is sat. Now, the body is there as a covering, just like I'm wearing cloth and each of us are. But the cloth is not me. It's a covering. And it's useful. We use our body in different ways, but it's not who we are. That's another difference. One is who we really are, and the other is who we really aren't. So the difference is that part and parcel living entity, who we really are, is conscious. Because we're part and parcel of the Supreme Consciousness. The body is not conscious. It appears to be conscious because of the presence of the conscious self. And when the conscious self leaves, consciousness leaves. So the body is not conscious. The body is dead matter that is animated by the life, that tiny, tiny, tiny spark of life within. Another difference, the spark of life, the soul, super tiny. And bodies can be really big. Elephant bodies have bodies. And the thing that animates the elephant body is the same thing that animates the fly. Or the microbial germ. There's different body sizes, but the soul is tiny. And it animates matter. So it appears that matter is alive, but it's not. It appears that matter is conscious. It's not. Matter is not conscious. The body is not conscious. Consciousness is of the soul. So, sat, chit, and ananda. The soul is the place of real happiness. The body is not. Because of the bodily conception, we think such and such is happiness, and then it's the opposite is also there. There's unhappiness or distress. The winters in Chicago are not happiness. It's distress. And now it's summer, so it's nice. So that's happiness. But that's the body. And real happiness is of the soul. So sat-chit ananda. Vigraha. The soul has form. The body has form. But the body has form because the soul has form. And when the soul leaves, the form of the body disintegrates. Goes back to the elements. So now you see it, now you don't. That's the body and its form and its appearance of pleasure and pain and knowledge and consciousness, eternal existence. It only appears like that. And the soul is who we really are. Okay. You have something? No, just scratching. Okay. Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.